This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, yesterday was a big day for the families of the victims of the Stardust fire. On Valentine's Day in 1981 at the Stardust in North Dublin, a fire broke out and 48 young people who were in the club died. They were aged between 16 and 27. It is undoubtedly one of the worst tragedies ever to happen in Ireland, and it has taken over 40 years for those families to get the justice they deserve. And to discuss this story, it's a pleasure to welcome to the stand Frank Connolly. Frank is an investigative journalist and an author, and Frank is one of a number of journalists, but not many, who from the first day when the Stardust nightclub was destroyed and became an inferno, it was suggested that this was arson, that it had happened when someone outside from the community had caused it, rather than the fire having started in the building and therefore someone other than the community being culpable. Frank, thank you very much for joining us. Yesterday's a huge day for these people who have suffered so much for so long. It was 1981. They waited over 40 years for some form of justice, and they appear to be vindicated, although there have been many impediments in their search for justice along the way.
Yes, hi, Eamon. I think the most important point exactly is that you've had a community which over 40 years, and you're talking about a very wide community of people in Artane, where the Stardust was, in Kilmore, in Coolock, in Edenmore, Raheny, and other parts of the North City, who've been under a shadow for many, many years, certainly up to 2008 anyway, when the suggestion that this was committed by one of the patrons in the club, one of the 850 people that were in the Stardust that night, and that somebody set light to a seating area where the fire was first seen inside the Stardust. That was ruled out after much pressure from families who were effectively being accused of telling lies, of covering up for a huge, horrific crime, of protecting their own, and of being of somebody within that community being responsible for the deaths of all of those young people and the injuries to over 200 more.
Yes, and it's important to note that this inquest was granted. It's taken 12 months. It began in April 2023, and the jury brought in a majority verdict yesterday. The verdict was that these people were victims of an unlawful killing. Now, before the inquest, and we didn't know until yesterday, Eamon Butterley did go to the High Court to seek an order that the finding unlawful killing be disallowed as a verdict of this inquest. He lost the case, and Mr. Justice Tony O'Connor refused Mr. Butterley's application. But it's nevertheless significant, isn't it? Because all through this, the Butterley name and the owners of this nightclub had sought to put the blame other than where it really belongs.
Well, absolutely. And in fact, Eamon Butterley, who was the manager of the Stardust nightclub, his father, Patrick Butterley, since deceased, set up the Stardust facility alongside his factory, which was processing vegetables that he grew on the family farm in North Dublin. So Patrick Butterley set up the Stardust. He got his son, Eamon, who had no qualifications, who left school at 14 and who was effectively the only experience he had was in growing vegetables, was appointed manager of the club. Over the years, Eamon Butterley, his father died. Over the years, Eamon Butterley has maintained a silence, other than when anybody suggested that he may be culpable, or his business, or his partners, or his company may have been culpable in the deaths of all of those 48 people. He has raised his head by going to court. There was the famous case when there was his objection to the song by Christy Moore, "They Never Came Home," back in the 80s. And since then, when the inquests were set up, and when the judge suggested that there may be findings, various findings possible, including unlawful killing, he tried to stop that when the inquests were commencing. And then we know, as you've said now, just weeks ago, when the time was coming that a verdict was due, he tried to stop any finding of unlawful killing by the jury at the inquest. Now, this raises questions that I'm sure you're going to come to as well, which is, now that that unlawful killing verdict has been made, albeit by an inquest, not a court of law, but by 12 people, a jury in an inquest, the question now is, and it was on the lips of everybody yesterday, after the relief for that community and for the families in particular, that every single one of those 48 was unlawfully killed. In other words, there was no exceptions. It was very important that all 48 were vindicated in that sense. But now the question is, well, who's responsible? If it is unlawful killing, then some person or people or entities were responsible because somebody broke the law. And I think that's where the focus will go now. It has firstly gone on calling on the government at this stage, 43 years later, to apologise to these families. That should have happened a long time ago. The state is responsible for the lives of these people who paid their entry fee and went to enjoy themselves, and they came, 48 of them never came home. But also, there's somebody has to be accountable for the failures of the state, not just those who allowed carpet tiles that were flammable, and that blocked exits, that had fire doors locked, that didn't have evacuation procedures in place.
And they were prominently on the wall and therefore helped the fire to spread and become an inferno very quickly.
In breach of all of the regulations, they were a class 4 carpet tile. The manufacturer said they were never intended to go on a wall. The inquest heard of all this evidence. The person involved in the company, a guy called Declan Conway, who acquired these at a sale from a company in Illingsworth in England, because the company was no longer going to produce these carpet tiles, got them at the knockdown price. They were put up on the wall. They looked good. They were red, but of course they were absolutely lethal when the fire spread from where it started in a hot press in a boiler. The boiler in the hot press vented onto the roof, even though there was a gap in the roof, which should not have been there. That's why the fire was seen outside the premises by people in neighbouring houses, and also by taxi drivers who reported that, and who gave evidence at the inquest, that they saw the fire sometime after 1:15, 1:20. The fire was only noticed in the Stardust at around 1:40. And at that stage, it had gone from the hot press into the alcove, the west alcove of the Stardust, and then spread rapidly because of the nature of the, in particular, the carpet tiles, but also the seats themselves had toxic material in them that made the air poisonous. So people were both inhaling toxic fumes as well as being had fire coming down on top of them from the roof, which was in flames.
Yes, now in November 1981, the November after the Valentine's Day tragedy, a tribunal of inquiry under Mr. Justice Ronan Keane concluded that the blaze was probably caused by arson rather than by accident, a finding that was contested by the relatives and has been ever since. It did, though, allow Eamon Butterley, who was the manager, as you say, of the Stardust, to claim $580,000 in compensation for malicious damage. This is a terrible irony, and it compounded the injustice that has run through this case right the way back to the very beginning. And this is a finding by Mr. Justice Ronan Keane in 1981. Subsequently, the families have sought justice in numerous ways. It took them an awful long time and support from people like you. And I should mention the late Charlie Bird in this, Frank. I mean, Charlie sadly has passed now, but he was a campaigner for those families. He listened, he gave them a voice, as indeed did you over the years, writing about it and insisting that justice had not been done and had to be done. This has been a long road for these people, and their courage and their fortitude, and of course, their grief and sadness.
Headed to Antoinette Keegan once the verdict was announced yesterday. Yes. In the emotional atmosphere of the pillar room in the rotunda, the relatives erupted and cheered and hugged and cried. It was an extraordinarily moving moment where everybody was present. And Antoinette, of course, who has led the campaign, following her mother, who, of course, started the campaign, she lost two daughters in the fire, and, yes, and Antoinette survived, luckily, having been separated from her sister, her older sister, Martina, physically by a young man who got her out of the flames. Martina died. And Christine, her mother, Christine Keegan, fought for years to get to the truth of why her daughters and indeed all of those other children died. So Antoinette, after when I said that to her, I said exactly the same thing. It's been a long road, a very long journey. And she said, yes, but it's worth it. It was worth it when we got this verdict today.
I mean, as recently, just to point out, as recently as November 2017, Judge Pat McCartan ruled that no new independent inquiry is warranted, and he criticised the evidence presented to him. And the families were very hurt by this, and they criticised his report, Pat McCartan's report, as rude and aggressive. So there is a long history here of these families. What it really means to fight for justice is you have to fight people in the system.
That is a particularly difficult period and shocking outcome. Yes. From the investigation carried out by Pat McCartan, appointed by the Cabinet in March 17. He is a former TD, Ridgely Workers' Party. It was an absolutely shocking decision made by Pat McCartan. And it allowed, it meant that the families had to wait for another 6 years before they got what they needed. And that came as a result of their solicitor, Dara Makin, asking the government to hold an inquest under the terms of the European Convention on Human Rights relating to inquests. And it was fortunate in a way, and I said this previously to you, that Seamus Wolfe, who had got himself into difficulties in other matters, but that he was the Attorney General, because Wolfe came from Clontarf, and he was of an age that he remembered. Yes. The Stardust and the impact it had on the entire communities in North Dublin, and knew and grew up with the knowledge that these people had been wronged, and that there was a suggestion that that they were not responsible, that somebody in the community was not responsible for the fire. So he went ahead and agreed in September 2019 that there should be inquests.
He was the Attorney General of the day in 2019 when he was able to do that.
That's right. And that was fortunate. And I'm saying there was a context to that because of his own background.
Yes.
And where he grew up. But going back to Mr. Butterley, and I was there when he gave evidence in the tribunal back in October of last year. And it was quite shocking. Firstly, the fact that he kept denying what the tribunal had already established from other witnesses, but that the doors, several of the doors, were locked. He insisted through a day of evidence that he didn't have a policy of locking doors, or that if he did, he ensured that they were opened again, all opened again, after 12 o'clock. This turned out to be a lie. And he said, I made all the exits. He said his main doorman, Tom Kennan, a relative of his, that all exits be opened by 11:30 on the night of the fire. And he was asked by Michael O'Higgins, the senior counsel, but you were locking exits. And then he said, no, I wasn't locking exits. And tellingly, it was then put to him, well, you were very slow to admit that actually there had been any doors locked. You denied it at the time of the first tribunal in 1981. But you weren't that slow in claiming $3 million in insurance. So yeah. On top of the 600,000 odd that you referred to, that he went for damages from Dublin Corporation, whose bylaws we now know he had breached almost totally willfully over many months, who had ignored the warnings of inspectors that they would close the place if there wasn't if he didn't stop the overcrowding.
Yes.
and the closure of exits and the blocking of exits
and the blocking of toilet windows.
And only weeks before had closed windows because he claimed that people were putting drink, alcohol and weapons through them. They were completely sealed and barred. And this was only done in the weeks, even though he was getting warnings at that time about the dangers that the fire just presented to people in the event of a fire.
Yeah, I mean, when we look at this overall, Frank, this is a community in the North Side. And as you pointed out before, it was badly hurt by the characterization of it, suggested that they had in fact been delinquency in the community that had caused these 48 deaths. But there has been a long battle from the authorities. And were it not for Paul Coffey and Seamus Wolfe, for example, and decisions made by people who might otherwise be expected to be establishment stooges. These people were brave, and these people like Coffey and Wolfe have made a real difference.
Well, they did, but they did it because of the persistence.
Yes, indeed.
The relative. That's fine. But when you go back, the problem is, and this is really what's shocking, is that no matter how interest of these people became later in the day, in the case of Paul Coffey, we were fortunate, and Wolfe. The point is, it took 40 years.
Yes.
Everybody knew from the 1980s, from the early 1980s, from the day after the fire, that something had gone wrong and that it should not have been blamed on these kids. The tribunal involved some of the most senior barristers in the state.
Yes.
Ronan Keane, of course, was a prominent judge from South Dublin, who's, as we know now, had, you know, his wife eventually was involved in a long-time relationship with Charlie Haughey. I watched the television last night. There was a clip of Haughey
crying,
talking about how deeply affected he was. At the same time, Patrick Butterley was a major supporter of Fianna Fáil. He was a member, his father, he was a member of TACA. These people all knew each other, and despite having the best brains from the law library in the tribunal with 300 witnesses over 122 days, remember, this was not a short tribunal,
no.
They failed to establish what most people, certainly the people in the communities affected, knew all along. But the question is, what was the culture at the time in the 1980s that allowed the state to avoid facing the possibilities that, firstly, the owners and the managers of this business had not complied with basic regulations. Keane acknowledged this in his findings in 1981. Then the question is, why did this system allow venues like this to operate? We know there were hardly any inspections. In fact, the jury yesterday recommended that there should be not just 70% inspections on places of entertainment as it is now, but 100%. That was something that was demanded by the fire service, by Dublin Fire Brigade, back in the 80s, and still hasn't been complied with. But the point is, there was agents of the state, including the Garda, the fire service, the corporation authorities and inspectors, all of whom realised there was something wrong.
Yes.
And everybody failed to do anything about it. It wasn't the first fire. There were fires in Dublin and other venues during that period, and indeed in other parts of the country, in Donegal, where a number of people died in Bundoora around the same time.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Now, Frank, the question is for the relatives of the victims, who are themselves, of course, victims. They want the state to apologise. Of course, they want the state rightly to apologise for what they have endured for 40 years. It's unbelievable to think that these people have been able to continue and show enormous courage and enormous fortitude. So the state owes them an apology and possibly more, Frank. I mean, I'm talking about unlawful killing of young people whose relatives are still alive and suffering today, many of them, not all of them, of course. Is there a question here of compensating people? The relatives haven't talked about it, and to their eternal credit, they have shown dignity as well as everything else. But there must be.
Absolutely. This has never been about
no,
money.
No, I know that.
They were given a paltry sum. While we've just referred to the fact that Mr. Butterley went rapidly to the insurance company for a $3 million compensation from his insurers. And once he got the verdict that this was arson, he would not have been entitled to that unless right. It was a verdict of somebody else being responsible, not him or his company. The second point is he got the compensation from the corporation. Meanwhile, the families got a pittance.
Yes.
Following a very, very brief 15-minute inquest for each person, which was literally just about the cause of death, but not the circumstances of the death. Now, we know the circumstances of the death. We have it agreed after months and months of investigation, research by the tribunal and by the legal teams for the families. And the question is, one, an apology from the state. Some politicians I heard yesterday referring to the issue of compensation, because many of these families lost out even on the basic rights they had who suffer, people who suffered injuries,
yes,
lost benefits that they should have been entitled, yes, to. And then the third thing has been referred to today. Yesterday wasn't the day for it, but today now the government has accepted that, firstly, the Stardust inquest file and determinations goes to the Department of Justice and to the Attorney General. And they now have to consider, firstly, what action should be taken to put into effect the response to what we now know is the unlawful killing of 48 people. Yes. That unlawful killing that presumably the Gardaí will now be asked to reopen the files. And remember, back in the day, the Gardaí didn't actually rush into any deep investigation into this issue, into this incident, which happened in the constituency of the then Taoiseach. The Gardaí at that time, obviously preoccupied, but a lot of other things that were happening in the state. But there was no proper investigation. And indeed, people from that community who were questioned by the Gardaí said afterwards, and this came up during the inquest, that the line of inquiry was, who caused the fire?
Yes.
Among you? Who among you caused this fire?
Yes.
Instead, we would have thought that perhaps, looking back, that maybe the Gardaí should have looked at other issues as well and questioned as well in more detail.
And just to point out, Frank, that the first inquest, which took place in 1982, lasted 5 days. This inquest, which the Dublin City Coroner presided over, Dr. Myra Cullinan, lasted a year. Justice, a measure of justice has been done, Frank, at least.
Absolutely. And Myra Cullinan was widely praised by the families who gave,
yes,
her a standing ovation yesterday, and by the lawyers who,
yes,
said she'd handled very sensitive issues very carefully and very professionally. So all of the credit, there is credit due, of course, to the way the inquests were handled. And also sensitive, not just because she was dealing with such tragic memories, because remember, the first number of weeks of the inquest were taken up with families giving pen,
yes,
pictures of the children who died, of the young people who died, and they were extremely moving. And it was very important that families were at the centre of this inquest, having spent so many years campaigning for it. And then they got into dealing with the experts, including fire experts that eventually identified, reluctantly at first, but under questioning, that the likelihood of the fire started in this hot press, in a boiler in the hot press, and that the flames, yes, spread to the were seen on the rooftop before they were seen. There was another theory which I argued, and I had done investigations on back in the early 2000s, and that was there was a lamp room which had a history of electrical faults in the ceiling area, just under the roof, and beside it was a storeroom which contained 4 gallons, 40 to 50 5-gallon drums of cooking oil, cleaning fluid, flammable floor polishes, etc., and then loads of napkins and toilet papers and others, which, of course, if that went on fire, and it did go on fire, but it didn't, it isn't where the fire started.
Right.
But that obviously intensified the fire when it caught on to that material. In the first tribunal, there was no reference to that.
No.
To the contents or to where that storeroom was. It was suggested it was in a basement. The original tribunal was told it was, oh no, that was in a basement. Well, actually, there was no basement in the Stardust. So there was misleading information given to the first tribunal, to say the least.
Right. Frank, we're very grateful to you. It is worth pointing out that these families, working class people from the north side of this city, have been so incredibly courageous and shown such great fortitude, and they have been helped by some in the media. And Frank Connolly is among that list of journalists who continued to investigate and continued to listen and continued to question the justice that was being meted out by the state.
On that, I think, yes, there was journalists and as we know, others in politics, TDs, most,
yes,
recently in Boylan, who brought them to Dara Mackin, who led,
yes,
the legal teams. But it ultimately all comes down to actual work and research and investigations done by the families themselves, by Gertrude Barrett on behalf of her son Michael, by Christine Keegan and Antoinette and other families and people that, because the system, the state had not investigated, they, from day one, from the 15th of February of 1981, they are the ones who have been following the trail and getting to the truth.
Okay, we're very grateful to Frank Connolly. Frank is an investigative journalist and an author and has been a scourge to many dodgy characters in this society for a very long time. Thanks to Frank.
Thanks, Eamon.
To all of you for listening. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.